step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Constantly remind people that we're trying to do something different. And in order to do something different, we actually have to do some things differently.
Welcome to the Schmidt List, the podcast for people dedicated to managing successful projects, developing impactful products, and building engaged teams. And now, here's your host, Kurt Schmidt.
Hello, 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 and welcome to episode 50. This week, we're talking to Jim Keen and Joe Rueckert from Farron. We sit down to discuss how building an innovation-driven culture comes from your organization's ability to communicate, and why taking a product instead of a project approach reduces risk and cost in the long term. Before we get started, I wanted to mention that I'm available to speak at your organization or conference on how to establish a growth mindset. Hit me up at Kurt, that's K-U-R-T, Kurt at foundrymakes.com to learn more. Speaking of Foundry, head over to foundrymakes.com to learn more about how we accelerate innovation in companies big and small. That's foundrymakes.com. And now, on with the show. All right, Jim and Joe, thanks for joining me today. Really appreciate you guys coming by. Tell me a little bit about Farron and what that is. What is a Farron?
Farron is a Germanish word for we're going or we're doing, or we're leading or we're driving. If you remember Farfignugen, it's based on that word.
Got it. That's cool. Tell me about what the business is. Like, when do I call Farron? Where am I at in my life when I say I should get a hold of these guys? And
the right time to call us is when you realize you don't either have the right team in place.
Sounds like a position I'm usually in when I'm already kind of frustrated.
Yeah, when you get to that point on some key initiatives and you realize either you don't have enough of the right people or you don't have the people that you need and you don't want to call another agency and you can't hire somebody, we're a good place to turn.
Got it.
Because we've got a group of people that can come in at the director or the VP level to lead your key initiatives, to play a key role on a interim, fractional, part-time, or contract basis, or just be extra muscle to kind of help push those key projects forward faster.
I got it. Okay, cool. Thanks for sharing that. If I'm a person in an organization and I'm kind of reaching to that spot, what are some of the early warning signs that I should be looking out for?
Yeah, I think there's a couple signals. One is when you're under competitive threat or when you see a competitor doing something and you need to respond.
And you don't have the tooling to do so.
And you don't have the tooling or the team, or in some cases, the ideas, or you just need an external perspective. So that's one signal. The second signal is when you're seeing an opportunity to go faster or to move more aggressively.
Okay.
And you need the kind of talent that can help you make a step change in your results.
Got it.
And those results could be either the pace at which you're going or the in-market results, or something more qualitative about the way that the team is working.
I see. So let's go to step one that you had mentioned. What if I'm the only one that notices this in my organization and it's just me and I'm telling other people, maybe I'm telling my boss or a peer or something, saying we've got this competitive threat, and they're like, yeah, but we've always done it this way.
Yep.
What are some of the things I can do to start to unhinge that, besides just saying, well, screw it, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Should I get everybody in a room? Should I start whiteboarding things? Like, what? How should I be able to start to communicate that need that I see?
Well, and first off, that problem happens all the time, right? And so you see people at the kind of usually the director level, the VP level, They're not the C-suite, but mm-hmm. they're not the kind of the doers on the ground. They're the roles in an organization that's going to feel that friction, right? Where you have top-down priorities coming from the C-suite, probably very stuck in the ways that they've been working, mm-hmm. At times very waterfall for those in the kind of the software yeah. side of the house. And the people on the ground want to do more. They want to move faster. And that director VP level is the spot where you're going to feel that pain first, right? Where you're responsible for both strategy and execution. Those are the teams and the people we want to come in and help with that conversation. Some first things first. Yeah, obviously identifying the issue. Data helps tremendously in those okay. conversations, but it's not always easy to get.
Yeah.
So understanding where you're currently at is always a good first step. Jim, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think anyone wakes up as a VP of a large company and says, geez, I've got a digital transformation problem.
Right.
Yeah. Nobody wakes up and says, I need to transform. Mm-hmm. But they do recognize that they either have a external pressure coming from competitors or market forces or disruptors that are going to force them to change, or they're realizing for a number of reasons, like what they were doing isn't working anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think the first step would be to try to take the story and simplify it as much as you can about we're here, this is what we're getting, there's a future that we want to get to, mm-hmm. we want it to be better, and we want it to look like this. And for us to go from here to there, some things need to change.
Yeah.
And no one will ever say, we need a whole digital transformation program.
Right.
But it'll come out in things like, well, we need to give our sales force a better set of tools, or we need to be more agile, or we have to change the mix of our talent on our team, or we need to distribute the way that we do our work differently.
Yeah.
And then that's where you can start to tell the story of there's a business opportunity in front of us, but we're going to need to go through some potentially painful changes, but the opportunity is really great if we do it.
Yeah. And I think that's the hard thing that I've seen before is that there's comfortability in doing it the way we've always done it,
yeah.
right? Like we've been growing, or, you know, maybe not growing crazy, but we haven't been going backwards, and we've been doing it this way for 20 years. Why are we having this conversation? Like, what's the point? Like, nobody's going to disrupt my blah, blah, blah industry, you know, my rock climbing industry or something, right? Like, nobody's coming in and going to take that stuff away. We just keep going, right?
It isn't always the disruptor. Hmm. It's the catalyst for that kind of rethink could be we've got a workforce that isn't fully engaged. We've got results that are flatlining. We're not growing. And if we're not growing, we're not creating opportunities for our employees. Or we have sort of business results that are within our reach, but we have to do something different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in some cases, you may have to, I don't want to say manufacture the urgency,
yeah.
but it will take it'll take a step back in a reassessment and a reevaluation to create the kind of urgency to say, all right, we got to do some changes.
Where I hear both of you talking about is there's got to be a large education effort. I mean, it's not just running around like Chicken Little or something and saying the sky is falling, right?
Yes.
You've got to start deploying some real education in a way that people can really understand, right?
Many times leadership jumps to kind of the obvious solution, which we see over and over again is technology. We mm-hmm. need a new technology, or we need a new platform for growth. But we don't either know how to buy it, or we don't know what it even needs to be,
yeah.
things like that. And so that education piece of, no, it's actually you need to completely rethink how you do business at mm-hmm. times, that's a very different conversation.
And a difficult one.
And a very difficult one.
Yeah.
When senior leaders are very incented to keep delivering quarterly results at times, or keep doing what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, that's what I've found is that there's many organizations, especially that I've worked with, where, I mean, you're talking to employees that have been there 20, 30, 40 years and telling them you got to change the way you work. And they're like, that's really cute. Thanks for that advice. Yeah, you can go.
or you're going in and you're saying, hey, you need to be more agile. And
right.
people are like, what do you mean? I've been agile for 20 years.
Yeah, right.
And exactly. and that's a really challenging conversation.
When I'm talking with other leaders in these groups where they're saying, we know we need a change, but where do we
start, right?
Yep.
And in some organizations I see, it's usually like sales is an easy target because sales is never performing as good as you hope they are. They could always be doing better. Where I've seen other organizations fail is the communication about why we're doing what we're doing. They're saying, we just got to change for the sake of change.
Yeah, that's never going to stick.
No.
No.
No, I mean, that's essentially saying, hey, jump higher. Not just jump, but jump higher.
So what are some ways that you guys have found ways that communicate change that have been successful for you?
Actually, I was thinking of a client we were working with that is in the food distribution industry, and they were very scared when Amazon bought Whole Foods because this was very disruptive in their minds to what they were doing. And the conversation at that point was challenging because it was, we've been in business for 50 years, we're a trucking company. And no, you're not actually. You're a logistics company, and you have to figure out supply chain. Great example. So that conversation started with an impetus of Amazon buying Whole Foods, but it ended up being very much a talent and a org structure and a speed to market conversation, which is very different than what they thought it was going in. And so it was kind of reframing the problem, if you will, was really critical to that conversation. And that was their senior leadership who was not thinking about kind of transformation the way we're talking about it or even thinking about it, but rethinking everything from the customer to how do we deliver value, right? And so reframing that conversation was vital, very helpful, very eye-opening, and it was not an easy conversation, in the meaning we had to be very blunt with them that what they were doing will not continue to work. And it was eye-opening for them to understand the urgency that they were not seeing around the corner. So I think having conversations to help our people we're working with or have met before see around that corner is super important. And it's not hard to, it's not easy to do, It's very hard to do because the communication is so important because people are so entrenched into what they're doing. So it had to be very educational, at the same time, very positive. Because if you don't give them any hope, there's no reason to be doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
So
celebrating the opportunity.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And they had a
team.
We're
all in this together.
We're all one team, one dream.
One team, one dream.
That's right.
Yeah, you're never going to get consensus. You're never going to get the entire population of the organization to say,
I need consensus. I need everybody to like me.
Well, that's not going to work.
Aw.
I mean, everyone likes you. But they're not all going to agree with you.
Right.
You know, I've been, if I had to categorize the initiatives that I've been part of, I would say that they kind of fall into a few buckets. One is, one bucket would be an opportunity for legitimate business model innovation. Okay. And I think it's easy to kind of tell the story there by saying this is an opportunity that's out in front of us. We have the chance to go after it if we work differently here, here, and here and apply these tools here, here, and here. And that's a relatively easy story to tell if you paint the competitive context.
And you're talking about a new line of business or changing the current line of business?
It would be, well, both actually.
Okay,
one would be, you know, let's keep doing what we're doing, but we're going to do it differently.
Right.
And the other would be we're going to be in a whole different business.
Got it.
So that's one. I think the other thing that I have seen work most successfully is where you sort of frame it as we're losing track of the consumer. The consumer's behaviors, their attitudes, their needs, their desires are changing faster than we can keep up with them because of the way that we're working. So by tying it more closely to let's stay closer to the consumer and let's stay dialed into the consumer insights and in some cases even be out in front of the consumer, By painting it like that, you create an urgency to change the way that you're working so that you don't fall behind the consumer. There's this amazing guy that I look up to quite a bit named Rashad Tabakawala. He's the head of strategy for Publicis. And he always says, you will almost always be behind your consumer, but you have a chance to be in front of your competitor.
Yeah, and it's really good.
I've seen that work really successfully. And then the other way that I've seen urgency created, or at least an understanding of the need to change created, was by an opportunity for growth and personal development of the team. By saying, hey, look, you know, whether it's a threat or an opportunity, we're going to change the way that we're doing this, and it's going to create opportunities for everyone here to learn something new or work in a different way or achieve something that they hadn't been able to achieve before. In other words, the organization's going to try to make a step change, but you all get a chance to make a step change too.
Yeah,
makes sense. So let's go further down that. Let's say we've identified that new line of business. We've identified those things. And now we're going to get to work, right? Now we're going to get starting doing stuff, which, again, sometimes I really have a problem with because doing stuff can feel like forward momentum, right?
Yep.
But sometimes it's not.
Busy versus productive, right?
Right.
Have you read Eric Ries's new book?
Mm, not the new one.
So the premise behind it, I think, is fascinating, and I've thought a lot about this, which is in organizations today, mid-size and up, even smaller organizations, the premise behind the book is how do you optimize what you currently have and actually change into a new business model at mm-hmm. the same time. And so it's that kind of the busy versus productive conversation about how do you focus? How do yeah. you understand the work? I liked what Jim was saying about starting with the customer. I mean, that's in almost any client we go in and talk to, their understanding of the customer isn't always thorough enough. I mean, even large companies have a hard time talking to enough customers. So thinking about that and then just getting into the work itself, it's challenging for teams because they are so ingrained into what they're doing. So an outside perspective can be super helpful to help them identify what's working, what's not, where should they be faster, where should they be maybe slower.
Okay. Well, I was talking with a CEO recently who was explaining how they need to modernize their platform. And I know exactly. Yep. I was like,
you
okay,
shake your head.
Tell me more about what that means.
Yeah, say more about that. Yeah,
more about that. And then proceeded to tell me what IT had told them was that, well, we need to use React and we need to start using this platform and we need to start using this and doing this and we need to get a prototype up and ready using these technologies and things. And they were a little confused because they were like, it feels like we're putting the cart before the horse a bit. And I was like, it doesn't feel like that. No, you literally are doing that, right? So what would be your first bit of advice to that CEO? Like where, because right now, like when I asked the question, where is that coming from? Where is that modernization thing coming from? Well, it's coming from customer complaints. We're getting customer complaints. It says we're having difficulty using the platform, which has been translated into it needs to be modernized. Hmm.
If I were coaching that CEO or sitting next to her, you know, trying to help her, my first question would be, ask what is the problem that we're trying to solve? Mm-hmm. Like, try to keep it as simple as you possibly can. And to Joe's point, focus it on the consumer. Like, what is the consumer? What is the user? What is the human on the other end of this thing? What problem does she have that we're mm-hmm. trying to solve? Mm-hmm. And start there.
Yeah.
And then use some sort of combination of the five whys method. It's like, why is that? Why mm-hmm, is that?
Right.
And get all the way to the fifth why, and you'll probably have an understanding of why you're doing what you're doing.
Well, because I see it in a lot of organizations, especially when they reach a certain size, where they start, where maybe when they were growing, they were younger, they were very strategic, and now they've slowly changed into a very reactive
yep.
organization. And I see it even in some of the largest organizations where we'll address something when it's a problem. We don't need to plan ahead, right? So
right.
I feel like sometimes these leaders get stuck in this sort of wedge between marketing and IT where there's nobody who owns that digital space in between, and their marketing saying, well, we need lead gen, and IT saying, we need security. Who wins?
Yep. Yes. Right?
But is it possible to get a yes? Because I've seen where other organizations have said, okay, well, fine, well, I'm going to create a digital group that is sort of this go-between in between these two, or I'm going to create some sort of hybrid of marketing and IT. Where have you guys seen it successful when an organization has to make that shift and have somebody who owns digital within what they're doing? This transformation, it can be owned by the CEO or something, sure, but they can't be a part of the day-to-day making sure the changes are happening, right?
Right. They shouldn't be.
No.
I mean, that's not the job of the CEO unless it's a really small company.
Right.
You know, it's probably going to lead us into a conversation around product organizations versus IT mm-hmm. and marketing. But I think one of the things inside of what we could call digital transformation is changing the way that you deliver the customer experience.
Okay.
And the, I don't want to call it a clash, but the constructive tension between IT and marketing has historically been, at least from my personal perspective, is because the goals weren't always aligned. The mm-hmm. functional goals of IT and historically most organizations were cost containment and driving cost out and keeping capital expenses low. And the functional objective of marketing was always growth. And those two things aren't always, you know, lined mm-hmm. up. So that idea of can we move to an organizational model where it's more product-centric and the goal of the product is to drive both top line and bottom line seems to be a way to address that.
Yeah. Is there a way to test that, though, without having to reorg the whole entire organization?
Well, I think at times, I mean, it's interesting to see the companies that have done it well typically don't create a separate innovation team that's apart from the entire organization, right? You don't typically see that working really well where innovation is really driven from one core team.
For the long term.
For the long term. However, what does work is using pilot teams. Mm. So within the core organization, using a single pilot team on a small problem and then testing learning from there, right? And so what we've done before and seen companies do well is, all right, we're going to take an IT leader, maybe a marketing leader, head of user experience, and put them together. And they're going to tackle a single problem as a cohesive unit versus being independent departments trying to work together and take the learnings from that. There's a couple of financial services companies here in town that have done that fairly well of kind of bridging out and taking and starting with pilot teams and then building out from there. That's one of the better tactics I've found that kind of works well. It's usually not going to be something where you stick someone off in a silo off to the side that you're going to get real meaningful traction.
Whiteboards and beanbags.
Exactly.
And yeah.
Beer on tap. Yeah.
But to Joe's point, I think the idea is get some success and then organize around that versus a top-down org with the goal of getting success.
Yeah.
Get something working and then do more of that and then organize so that you can do even more of that.
And I think the KPI that is critical for those teams is actually learning, right? Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily direct results. It's what did we learn from it? Yeah. How do we get better? What worked? Exactly what Jim was saying. What worked? Let's double down on that and keep going.
Yeah, I like that because this year I'm a Techstars mentor for the retail. Yep. What I really appreciate is the weekly status reports that come out from each of the startups. And this is one thing I've seen in organizations where they failed miserably, where they are trying to maybe they get the idea to do the pilot group, right? But they should be blasting this information out to the organization at large. It should not just be a pet project of some VP or something like that. This should be something where they are celebrating the wins and losses and explaining the discoveries they're making as they're going along. And I found two really good reasons for that. One is that it starts to build, obviously, awareness for that. Oh, the company is making changes. Oh, I should keep an eye out for that. And so if change is brought to my door, I'm not super surprised that there is change in the air.
Right.
Number two is that I can also, wait a second, I've seen that before. I actually have some data. Let me pull it out of this drawer from 6 years ago from this thing we did with this outside agency that I've never actually been able to share with anybody before because I don't know who to share it with. Here's some more information that you might need in order to be successful, right? It's that communication piece around those things, because I've seen it where people send an innovation team or a pilot team, like, you're going off site and you're getting out of here because we're just, you just can't work here, you know, like, or whatever it is, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we're trying to loosen the constraints.
We need new ideas. So how can you come up with new ideas in the same place that you were before?
You know, getting back to communication, one of the things that I've seen be effective, and I would put this in the pro tip category, is constantly remind people that we're trying to do something different. And in order to do something different, we actually have to do some things differently. You know, that idea of...
That's crazy.
Shocking.
Yeah, but I've been on teams like that where you... I think I've led teams where you forget that the key goal is to figure out how to do things differently. And it's an easy way for the organization to forget that your team was chartered to pioneer something.
Yeah.
And... evaluate your team's success or your performance with the old lens. So it's why you see the plug getting pulled on the pilot teams or the innovation efforts because, well, they weren't driving business. And in a lot of situations, those teams, the primary goal was to do something different or to pioneer something or to figure something out versus adding to the top line immediately.
So, Joe, if I'm on one of those teams and they're saying, well, yeah, no, you got to get your timesheet done by the end of the week and, you know, and you got to make coffee by five and whatever the case, like, what should I be doing? Because I mean, it obviously makes sense what Jim is saying is like, this is, you know, more of the same, but it's just got a new kind of like paint job on it. What should I be doing in order to de-incentivize or re-incentivize?
The thing for me is until you're shipping product, the core role of that leader of that team is communication. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk a lot about that with digital transformation and everything else. Culture and communication typically go first.
Right.
As the leader of that team, assuming there is one, I think the most important thing they can be doing is outreaching to other leaders across the organization and sharing very proactively the key learnings, both good and bad, for what they're doing. The thing that ends up happening is because everyone, especially on the ground, wants to be the cool kid working on the startup team.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Anyone in any exciting. Very exciting. We're bleeding edge. We're doing things differently. Exactly what Jim was saying. And the role of that leader of that team is to actually disseminate out across the organization what is working and, more importantly, what isn't. And so that communication is vital.
Yeah.
So I think from my standpoint, having been on a couple of those teams, having led a couple of those teams, it's literally the thing that made my team successful or not was not actually typically the results, although that was very important. Don't get me wrong. It was how effectively we were connecting with peer teams throughout the organization. That was actually more of a leading indicator or KPI of how successful the team would be rather than the actual results itself. And so setting up meetings and knowing who those stakeholders were, being on their calendar regularly, like pro tip from Jim, like get those on the calendar regularly. Because if you're in an isolation situation, you will inherently will not succeed, even if the new project, new innovation, whatever you're doing is great, won't matter. It won't get absorbed back into the broader organization.
You know, if I can just riff on that for a second.
Yeah, please do. Please.
I wish that I would have like fully grasped earlier in my career just how important that idea of the communication is.
Yeah.
Now, everyone will agree that, well, as a leader, you should communicate more, right? I wish somebody would have said to me when I was 30, like, look, when you become a manager or a director, your main deliverable is communication.
Yeah. Yep.
You're going to be
accountable
for your results, and they have to be good results, but you're going to be evaluated as an effective leader by the way in the deliverables that you make as a communicator.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's a critical skill for somebody that's actually trying to drive change inside of an organization.
Let's say I'm an organization and, you know, before I start this whole idea of digital transformation, I want to start sourcing new ideas. Maybe I want to engage the team or the company at large on, like, what are some opportunities you folks see for us? What should I do? Like a suggestion box or something like, where do you know, obviously you can look, and we've been talking a lot about the outside. Like, I see the competitors. I see the landscape that my company's up against. But what about inside? Is there a way that I can spark some innovation internally without necessarily that negative threat?
Well, I'm going to hold off on the how do you spark the innovation, but to your where you were going when you started the question was how do you communicate the opportunity? And I think the piece of advice I'd give to somebody that's at a manager or director or even the VP level inside of an organization is understand the long-range vision of the CEO. She's probably got a 3 to 5 year LRP long-range plan that she's communicated to the board. She's probably communicated that at a high level into the organization. Your job, no matter what level you're in, is to understand where the CEO is trying to go and what your boss's objectives are, and even better, what your boss's objectives are.
Yep.
And as you're talking about things, if you can play those back as, hey, you know, I heard the CEO talking about this last month, and, you know, the objective here is this, this, or this. Here's a couple ideas that might put us on a path to that. I mean, I think that's always going to be much more effective than, hey, did you hear about blockchain? You know, or like, we should try to apply a little AI or some machine learning.
Yeah. Let's
side note, nobody really knows what that means
right.
when you're talking about it. But anyway, that idea of like frame it in the goals of the organization is an easy way to get people to listen, I think.
Got it. And so not just launch an ICO.
Right.
No.
Although, let me tell you about mine.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting as Jim was talking about that, what was going through my head was incentives, right? And what are the incentives of my leader, or what are the incentives of my leader's leader?
Yeah.
And ironically enough, Jim and I spend a lot of time thinking about the human person in that situation, right? So if you're trying to influence up without authority, the thing that ultimately can work, maybe not all the time, or maybe this isn't the right way to frame it, but that person has a career, right? That person wants to be promoted. The person above you wants to get to the next level. Mm-hmm. So even things Jim and I will talk a lot about, like, how are you compensating your C-suite, right? Which is a totally different tangent. We won't go down that path, but it's important to understand what the human above you or the human on the other side of the table is actually looking for. And it may not be to revolutionize the organization for 10 years of growth. It may actually be, I just want to get promoted in the next 2 years and coast. Well, that's a very different situation in understanding what's going to work in your organization,
yeah.
Right? It's organizational psychology,
yeah.
On some level.
It is, yeah, because I've seen organizations, I've literally had these conversations where I've talked to a leader and they're like, my team is not bringing me new ideas.
Sure.
I hired these smart people and I keep getting no new ideas. And then I go and I find out what these people are incentivized for, and it is to, you know, keep the lights on. It is not for inventing new lights.
And I'd also want to know what happened the last time the team brought new ideas.
Yeah. Right.
Did anything happen?
I don't think
were
so.
Were they shot down? Were they supported? Were they encouraged?
Yeah. I think, again, it's one of those communication paths where I think you had said it, right? If there is that long-term vision, it should be easy to tie things back to it and say, does this help achieve this vision? Yes or no.
Yeah.
And if it says yes, then we continue the conversation. If it says no, we stop the conversation.
I think the other reason why those new ideas might not always get acted on is because most teams are probably too lean and they're probably doing too much.
Yeah.
And there's probably not enough discipline around saying no to things. And so I would put this, I guess, another thing in the pro tip category. When you're bringing a new idea to your boss, it's a good idea to say, here's something I think we could start, or we should be thinking about starting. Mm-hmm. And in order to make room to do that, we could stop these other things.
Yeah.
Because it's
a capacity problem.
Yeah. It's less of a yes and, or like, let's add one more onto our already busy schedule.
Or let's mortgage our house to do this new thing.
Right.
Yeah. It's more of a, this is just a shifting around of resources or shifting of focus and kind of going back to that idea that strategy is about what you say no to.
Yep.
And as much as it's about what you say yes to, and it's like, all right, well, we can do this, but we can also stop that in order to make the capacity to do that.
Mm-hmm. And so if I'm trying to grow the organization and I'm trying to do it based on new ideas versus just doubling down on what we're doing, maybe I'm getting excited about these new technologies and I want to find opportunities in them. Like, what should I be doing? Like, should I be tasking my team out? Should I go out first? Should I be like the pilot to go out and learn about these things? And should I go to conferences? Should I have some folks like Farron come in and talk to me about what the opportunities and landscape are? Like, where should I begin?
Yeah, it's interesting. Where my head went was thinking back on my career, having been at times successful and other times very unsuccessful in this, was I think the times I was most successful is when this is probably at the portfolio manager level, someone who's kind of looking over either a suite of products or product teams or capabilities, is we literally, like, very deliberately set aside 20 to 25% of capacity for new idea testing and learning and 80% of optimization of what we were already doing. You know, it's easy to understand. You know, in e-commerce, let's take that for a second, you know, optimizing your funnel and what you have, 80% spend that time there, spend 20% of your time thinking and testing and learning into completely maybe new distribution models or new growth channels or even new business models altogether. And so it, for me, where my head went with that was, as that portfolio leader, having a very deliberate, we are going to set aside X percent of capacity. And maybe you start with 5%, you know, and you give a couple people one day a week, whatever it is, you know, however the math works out for your team, give them the freedom to go test and learn into something new and grow it from there.
Yeah.
But it had to be very deliberate and it had to be at that portfolio level.
Right.
Otherwise, the capacity problem came up time and time again. We only have so many hours a day and so many people to do the work.
Bringing it back to the job of the CEO, or let's just put it at the officer of the company level, so it could be VPs or C-level folks, that is their job. You know, if they feel like, if they realize that there's an imperative to change the company, part of their job is to say, we need to carve out space in our portfolio. First of all, we should be taking a portfolio approach to our plans for the year. Second, we should be carving out space in our portfolio so that we can actively experiment, so that we can learn how to be more responsive to our consumer or the marketplace.
Yeah.
Yep.
And building that into the program, if there is one, for driving a transformation inside of the organization.
Yeah, I like that idea because I've heard other people talk about taking that portfolio first sort of approach. But I know really large organizations that are terrible at it.
Yeah, almost all of them
are. I was going to say, I think it's rarer for the good ones, to be honest with you, right? Most organizations are not good at that inherently.
Yeah, and I think that's a real problem because in some of these large organizations, I've even seen going in where three other people are working on the exact same thing. They're just not within visual distance, or they're not on the same team or something. They may be in a different state and they're all working on the same thing. And actually a team 3 years ago led a large initiative that was very similar, but it was named something else. So it never showed up on my radar. I think those things are really challenging.
I guess that's where incentives come back in.
Yes.
Because I think what happens...
Put your money where your mouth is.
Well, I think humans are rational for the most part. Mm-hmm. And I think when push comes to shove, a lot of large organizations are driven by quarterly results.
Yes.
And they're going to sacrifice the 15% learning to drive the results. Mm-hmm. You need discipline and commitment and alignment at the top of the organization so that the manager-level people feel comfortable experimenting, even though they know some of their key short-term results are maybe not hitting all the numbers. Mm.
What are ways that you would suggest somebody can track their transformation so they can actually see results?
It's almost the misnomer of digital transformation, right? Which is, there certainly is a maturity model or a continuum.
But when is my transformation going to be done, Joe?
It will never, ever be done, Kurt. I'm sorry. No, it really is. I mean, it's a culture shift, right? It's absolutely a mindset shift for an organization, which is very difficult, which is why organizations struggle with this on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. It'll never be done, but I think one of the companies we're working for right now, one of their kind of transformation KPIs, if you want to call it that, is idea to delivery velocity, right? And so they want to know and they want to track implicitly, we have an idea, we've prioritized it, how quickly does it get to market? So that speed to market is something they value very much. Mm-hmm. So working with the teams, obviously tracking from idea to some A/B testing to design to prototype to build, right? That kind of flow. They track all the way end to end when that idea was approved to when it hits delivery. Mm-hmm. And their goal of the entire organization, they've created a ROC for the quarter, or for the year actually, to shorten that duration as much as possible. But they don't. The inherent problem with that is they don't know what good is necessarily. Yeah. They don't know what it should be. They don't know, should it be 1 week? I mean, from idea to execution, can we get it down to 1 week? Where it's currently at 3 to 4 months, right? Is it 2 weeks? They don't really know, but they know they want to shorten it. And the entire organization is tasked with looking at every step of the process, mm-hmm. and getting that reduced. So speed to market and putting KPIs there is their goal. Is the way they're doing it.
That's great. I really like how you framed that, where it's not about just like a set it and forget it kind of goal, right? Like, we're 30% better.
Yep.
You know? But again, I think that's where I've seen some people from more traditional management backgrounds in older, larger organizations that don't understand why it can't just be done. Like, why can't I, everything else in my life, I know what the price is before I buy it. I know what it's going to do when I get it. Mm-hmm. And then when I get it, it's done.
There's probably a whole presentation or keynote in what I'm about to say, but I think one of the hallmarks of what I've seen anyway of the most successful digital transformation efforts is a shift in thinking from the leadership of organizations from a project mentality to more of a product mentality.
Yep.
And a project mentality is one where this is a specific period of time with a specific deliverable, and once we hit that thing, it's done. And a product mentality is exactly what you'd imagine. It's got a life cycle. It continues to evolve based on what's happening. It's managed for outcomes, not for deliverables. Mm-hmm. And I think the organizations that are looking at it like Joe just described, where there's a continual effort to improve some specific metrics, but it never stops,
right,
is sort of a hallmark of an organization that is on the right track for transformation.
Yep. That's great.
And so products, not projects.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's our motto at Foundry too, is that we don't ever take on a project with folks. It's always a product build, because we know that the type of work that we do, it's got to be something that lives for a long time, has a lot of impact. It's not just about a set it and forget it sort of sort of implementation, right? Like, let's connect Salesforce to Salesforce. Like, I don't know, whatever. Like,
well, the other reason why
imagine. I could see somebody integrating Salesforce into Salesforce. Sorry.
I'm sure it's happened before.
So the other reason why that product mentality is so important is because it's really focused on the user or the buyer or the customer versus a project mentality, which is like, let's just get this metric to move.
Yep.
And it's easy to have the metric be divorced from the end user or the employee or the customer. And you just sort of manage to that metric versus managing to the customer outcomes.
But I know my customers. I've built this business over the years. Why they're going to think I'm dumb if I'm asking them what I should do for them. I should be just telling them what good is, right? I mean, isn't that how I stay in business?
Yes and no. What I would say is, and as Jim was talking, I was thinking about, you know, the real benefit to product and product philosophy and product thinking and product delivery is actually it's a reduction of risk, right? And I think that's as a leader in an organization, that's kind of what you're charged with, right?
Yeah, that's your goal.
We want to come up with product ideas and test and learn into those ideas, and that's actually a mechanism for reducing risk. So in a project organization, the set it and forget it model, you're going to build something, you're going to release it into the wild. You may track it later and you may iterate upon it, you may not, but you're guessing at that point. And I think the beauty of what a product organization does is they don't guess. They actually reduce risk by very small incremental, small testing, rapid learning, rapid ideation and iteration. That's really the foundation of what great product teams do. So I think that's super important to call out that in fact, you may think you know your customer. That in fact, human intuition, like being irrational, is often wrong.
Yeah.
And so the product model helps reduce the risk of being wrong and helps you get maybe out of your own head a little bit, focused on the customer, testing and learning, and not assuming. I think that's the biggest risk that leaders who have been in business for 20 years kind of make. Oh, I assume I know my customer as well as I do. Mm-hmm. I assume what I'm building for them is what they're asking for, what they're needing, when in fact they may have changed in the last 6 months and that assumption is now wrong. And you're wasting capacity, you're wasting resources, you're wasting time. And moving further away from what your customer is actually looking for. Mm-hmm. So I think that's super important.
Kirk, can I go back to your original question and give a practical answer? Mm-hmm. You were asking, how do you measure success? Mm-hmm. I think if you're the leader of a large organization and you're sort of asking them to change and you're asking them to transform and you've given them a reason why, you also owe them a way to understand how they're making progress. Mm-hmm. So that idea of whether you want to call it a maturity model or a roadmap to the future or some signposts along the way is something that I believe is the responsibility of the leader that sort of kicked it off. So in a 100-person firm, that's a C-level thing. If it's an enterprise, it could be the division leader, it could be the functional leader, it could be the officers of the company, but it should be managed programmatically, and there should be some sort of way for the team to be able to understand themselves whether they're making progress or not.
In the last few years, a lot of leaders have been promised that they can get things cheaper and yesterday if they start going down this agile route, right?
Is that the pitch for agile?
Yeah, that's one of the pitches. At least it has been for a while,
I think that's the wrong pitch.
It literally is the wrong pitch. But that's what I've heard people say is like, well, this gets me a more autonomous team. It gets me things happening faster. And eventually it just costs less money because I spend less time up front planning.
Wow. I want to meet that person that made that pitch because that's wrong.
I could probably send you a couple of YouTube videos.
Probably.
Yeah. Well, so is the question like, what's the right pitch
is
that?
Yeah. Cause again, like if my company is moving towards agility, why should we?
We should have a beer and talk about this.
Oh yeah. Or six.
Right.
I think my answer to that, my personal answer at first, my first response would be, if you think of it as saving money, the way that you would save money would be avoiding bad spend on sunk costs of projects that aren't working.
Mm. Yep.
An agile approach, whether it's in product development or marketing, gives you the ability to shift off of things that aren't working faster
mm-hmm.
versus continuing to do those things until the project is done.
Got it.
So to the extent that you can avoid spend, I think that's a way to save money. I would say, though, that longer term, you should be selling it as a way to maximize your outcomes, because you get to the most impactful outcomes faster, I think, through agile versus trying to do it the old way.
Hmm.
I think there's an inherent tension along with what Jim is saying, too, about leadership, and I'll use the term waterfall. Leadership at the C-level and even the VP level is looking for agility, and they're looking at it specifically, typically, from their delivery teams.
Yeah.
We want our delivery teams to be moving faster. Yet agility at an organizational level is equally important at the C-suite and the VP level and up, where we see tension in clients where they want their delivery teams moving faster, but mm-hmm. they're still asking for 18-month roadmaps broken down by month and by project. And so there's no agility at the top of the food chain, and they're asking for agility at the bottom of the food chain.
Mm-hmm.
And those things, I think, inherently are going to be in conflict. And so you're going to have problems every time you see an organization with that. So thinking about agility at the enterprise level all the way through is a very different conversation than we want our delivery teams working in sprints, and we want to be, you know, learning quickly and running A-B tests.
Yeah.
And those are fabulous. You absolutely should be doing that. Where the conflict ends up coming in is for a leadership team that is working in a very kind of historically waterfall model, mm-hmm. expecting their delivery teams to be in agile. Is that really going to move you any further ahead than your leadership team is willing to go?
Yeah.
And the answer is typically not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to think. I think a lot about organizational agility versus just agile and scrum and Kanban and how delivery teams work to get ideas out quicker, when in fact leadership, you know, from, let's take OKRs for example. You know, typically you'd want an OKR starting at the CEO level, then going mm-hmm. down to the C-suite level, then going down to the VP level, then down to the director and down to the manager, right? And one of the things we talked about earlier, tying work to the kind of overall organizational goals.
Right.
That's how OKRs are supposed to work. But in reality, they typically don't work that way. So it's interesting. I think of agility a lot in the the premise of we're going to have our delivery teams move a lot faster, when in fact leadership doesn't support them in an agile way either.
Yeah.
So the organizational agility is missing.
No, I think that's an important case that you're bringing up, because the word agile or scrum or these other types of things have always ended up going first initially through the CTO door.
Yep.
And not through the CFO door or these other things. But I could imagine if it did go through the CFO door, it'd be a very different approach, especially how products are funded and things like that, right? And that would kind of help with the agility of it, because I've seen where some large organizations have done like a little startup internally, but they get all their funding up front for the year.
That's
you
right.
know, and it's like, wee.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go. Like, you know.
Jim's just shaking his head over here.
Yeah, now we can go and rent that cool space on the river and put beer and dogs in there. And it's going to be...
It's the key to success.
I think I know which organization you're talking
about.
We're
going to be so innovative, you guys. Yeah.
Well, I'm sitting here thinking about the premise that you laid out, that Agile is being sold as a way to go faster and cheaper. And I know that I'm guilty of saying frequently, hey, it's time to accelerate.
Sure,
and
right.
And I think we owe it to the people that we're talking to be honest and transparent about just what it is that's going to get accelerated.
Yeah.
So it really should be a faster response to changing markets, mm-hmm. a faster response to changing consumer needs, a faster response to turn things off that aren't working,
yes.
a faster redeployment of resources mm-hmm. To things that are going to drive more impact, a faster rebalancing of the team if you need somebody else or need to get rid of some people or move some people onto different programs.
Right.
So it's really the emphasis on the agility, not just overall pace.
Mm.
So it's really more about responsiveness, speed mm-hmm. to response.
So agility, not velocity?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. We need to keep thinking about that.
No, it depends.
Whenever we're talking about things like this, so often it does come down to incentivization.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about at the beginning of the podcast, comes full circle, right? Yeah. Like, how do you incentivize people to actually be comfortable with change when you don't know the outcome, right? Versus status quo. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm comfortable in my job and I'm here and I don't have an ERP that's going to replace me in 6 months. I think that's really hard.
Yeah.
And that is a, you know, that is a top-down type mentality that does need to happen on some level of thinking about how do we incentivize our top leaders to incentivize their leaders to actually make meaningful changes, even if it doesn't work the first time.
I want to thank you for coming on the show. So tell me about Farron, where can I find you? And if I want to reach out to talk to you guys more about digital transformation and looking for some help and some talent and some advice, like you had mentioned, where's the best places to find you?
Yeah, I think the best place to start is at our website, hellofarron.com. H-E-L-L-O. That's how you normally spell hello. Mm-hmm. And then Farron is F-A-H-R-E-N.com.
Okay. And if I want to connect with you guys individually, LinkedIn, is there are places you're more active than not?
LinkedIn is great. Twitter, at Joe Rueckert.
I'm not a fan of LinkedIn. Find me on Twitter.
Find your Twitter.
Jay Keen.
Okay. I'll post links to everything in the show notes too. I appreciate you taking time to come on the show today.
Kurt, thank you so much for having us. This is great.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to The Schmidt List. If you want to learn more about how Foundry accelerates innovation, check out foundrymakes.com. And if you'd like me to speak about establishing a growth mindset at your conference or with your team, drop me a note at kurt@foundrymakes.com. Oh, and the next time you're on the internet, head to iTunes and leave the show a review. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, because sharing is caring. I truly appreciate you taking the time to listen to the show, and I hope you have a fantastic week.